Blog Talk Radio.
It's so I'm glad we did. Is he talked a little bit about Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch? I've talked about this quite a bit, both on the Hits and Misses column and here on the show. I am a massive fan of both Orkin and Burch. So anytime I get to see them come out, even though I know they're probably going to be staring at the lights, I am a fan of getting to see them. I almost jumped out of my chair. I'm not going to lie, when they got the win tonight, I really wasn't expecting it. I love these two guys and what they bring. Like I said last week, when we were talking about like your favorite wrestlers on NXT. I don't necessarily see him breaking beyond the ceiling he currently is kind of at. But man, Oney Lorcan, I mean, but you know, him and Danny Burch, I don't think they're going to be, you know, evolving much beyond where they're at, but they're a great act. Just beautiful, hard hitting tag team wrestling. Love it. Can't say enough good about them.
Did you watch that Survivor Series match on 205 like I told you to?
I did, and that was a hell of a match as well. It's a hell of a match.
Good stuff. And I thought you'd some good time in the ring by Oney. Didn't make it, but he got close. He was the last baby face to go.
Yep, and, exactly.
And of course, plenty of swerve.
Yes. No, it was a great match. It was like really some of the only live wrestling I watched last week. I still got to catch up on AEW last week. With all this free time I have at home, I figured I'd remember to watch, and I completely forgot to turn it on and check out last week's episode. So I guess tomorrow I'll have a double dose of Dynamite. But there we go. So as far as all the takeover matches, I'm assuming they're probably going to space them out over the course of a few weeks. I don't think we're going to just get like one massive takeover NXT type show. I don't know if it's necessarily going to hurt. It might hurt some of the momentum going in because, you know, wrestling historically is, you know, you have all these shows that build to the big blow off, the big show, the pay-per-view, what have you. And where this isn't going to be at a big show, it might hurt a little bit. However, I think everybody kind of understands why. We're all living through this craziness together. So I think we all might understand why TakeOver isn't happening. And it might kind of get a little bit of a buy, if you will, with the fans. I don't think it's really going to hurt all that much, we'll see. I'm kind of hoping that this is a rebound in the ratings for them as well this week. Last week's show, I mean, we talked about it for what it was, and especially, you know, we didn't like. There's just so many unknowns right now with this whole coronavirus thing. We weren't quite sure what we were getting. I don't know if they were quite sure what they were going to produce. They had that, there were those three like documentary length segments. First one was that hour long segment on Gargano and Ciampa's feud. We had the Finn Balor segment and then the Rhea Ripley segment. And they were all well done. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, as I said last week, I was definitely ready for the show to be over maybe about halfway through the first 45 minutes or so. I think what they did was great, but I wasn't tuning in to watch a documentary show. I was tuning in to watch wrestling. So it was a little bit of a disappointment. I think that also reflected in the numbers last week. If I remember, there was only about 540 some odd viewers as opposed to nearly a million at AEW, if not over. I don't remember the exact number, but I know it was a quite a big gap there compared to most weeks. So I am hoping this is going to be a bit of a jump up. It was really nice at the beginning. Obviously, we're talking about the end of the show, but you know, the beginning of the show, you're jumping straight into that match with Theory and Breeze, you know, where you jump straight into live wrestling. I'm hoping that might have hooked some people in. That might have been just tuning in to see what NXT was going to do this week, as opposed to last week, and where they may have seen live wrestling, they might have stuck around rather than flip over to TNT. But at least that's my thought on that. And I think I might have touched on everything I wanted to talk about. So I'll throw it back to you.
Sounds good. We are going to go to. Am I muted or unmuted? Okay. Pretty sure you can hear me now.
Yep.
We are going to go to our caller from 478. So let me go ahead and unmute him. And 478, state your name and where you're from.
How y'all doing today? This is Darrell from Georgia.
Oh, how'd I know? What's up,
Darrell? Hey, Darrell. What's up, man?
No problem. Right. No problem. So, hope y'all are all staying safe today.
Likewise.
Yeah, we just got the shelter in place. That's going to start on Friday night here. I've only seen five different people in the last week and a half anyway, so I've been doing my part. All right, so yeah, heavy show as far as matches. We got seven matches, and very heavy on – I would say in-ring minutes. It wasn't heavy on in-ring minutes, but it was heavy on the number of matches. And we had some faces that we either haven't seen before at all or haven't seen in quite a while. So bearing any of that in mind, I know you got at least a few questions for us. So go ahead.
Yes, sir. Okay, tonight we give y'all another full pack. So my first question tonight will be, tonight we got back to normal, got a few more than a few matches tonight, and we got a few angles off of matches. We had one where they took out Xia Li. Somebody took out Xia Li, and we got the returning Io Shirai, which I think was awesome. We got also a new debuting tag team led by Michael Bivins. And we had an angle at the end of the big segment of the main event, and it looks like Killer Cross. So with all these angles that they shot, how did you guys like it, and where do you guys think they will be heading with each of the angles?
I was stunned to see so many debut and return angles on a show like this, because just in its time, because normally after WrestleMania is when you start to see those things happen. And yes, NXT doesn't go to WrestleMania, but they've got their own kind of mini WrestleMania in the next 2 weeks. So I was surprised to see that. On the other hand, it's likely that they taped a lot of these shows on the same day or couple of days. And so having the right people available at the right time and not overextending people on any given day, I guess I'm not surprised that they did some of this. I love that we finally saw Malcolm Bivins. Love it. And I'm going to be throwing to Tom because he was able to give me the names of the guys in that match. There's some real fun stuff about a fun fact about one of the guys in that tag team. I'm very interested with Xia Li. I thought that it was going to be related to Dakota Kai, and it still might. But I thought that was maybe going to be her sneaky way into the match, but that is not what happened. It was very cool to see EO, and I wish we could have heard that pop. But these times are what they are, and it's just nice to see her back, and the idea of EO in a ladder match, all day. So, on the various post-match angles, and I will throw to Tom because he's got the inside scoop on who these two Middle Eastern giants are.
So indeed, I was looking forward to the eventual EO pop. I figured it was coming relatively soon, not tonight, but I figured it was coming relatively soon. But with things being the way they are, if you've got EO healthy and willing to work and in the area, then freaking use her. I'm okay with this. I went from being very disappointed that Xia was not going to get the spot, because when I saw Aaliyah versus Xia, I was like, oh, hey, they actually have enough faith in her now to put her in this six woman ladder match. And then I went from being very disappointed that that was not the case to being elated that it is in fact EO. As far as the new faces that we saw, I think that what we're seeing is, very similar to what we're seeing with the awkward shifting of some of the Mania undercard matches with people like Dana Brooke and Rey Mysterio, self-quarantining and in Brooks' case, reportedly feeling symptoms. I don't know about Mysterio. I've heard multiple reports, but I pretty much just go by. I consider it fact when Wade reports it. So I've heard some other stuff that I'm not gonna repeat. I don't know about Mysterio, but Brooke definitely symptomatic. I think what we're seeing is WWE being okay with certain wrestlers saying, you know what, I'm not going to show up right now, and perhaps being limited in other cases with certain wrestlers feeling ill and doing what they can. At the same time, I feel like this is also perhaps foolhardy, because while certain people in the government are saying certain things, it really feels like we have it. Well, I mean, scientifically, we have not reached the peak of this yet, and it feels like we are still in the early stages of it. So I feel like they should be. I guess on one hand, you'd think, okay, yeah, they should be setting up some stuff that they can utilize for the next couple months. But at the same time, we also don't know if, like, after this weekend, if they're just going to get shut down and not be able to tape anything else, and they'll have to resort to showing, like, old matches with Adam Cole on his lanai narrating them, you know, just to try to freshen it up a little bit. So it seems like they're planning ahead with the tools that they have, but also perhaps a little bit too optimistically considering the circumstances. I'll try to be brief on the specifics. Brendan Vink is someone I've liked for a while. I'm not going to say I'm through the roof on him, but I really like his YouTube series called Smug. I've mentioned that on here before. It's very funny. He really knows who he is and acts that way. I agree with Catani that he should probably switch to pants, but at the same time, it's almost like a Bo Dallas thing, with Bo Dallas sort of like bringing his flabby belly into his character, how he does a victory run and it flabs about. The fact that Elliot Sexton, that's his indie's name, Brendan Vink is so smug and overconfident, and still sort of has an awkward posture to him, and his butt pokes out a little bit, especially prominent when he's wearing the trunks, I think adds to his character a little bit. Killer Cross, I talked about him, don't know too much. That's just me personally, but people seem to be optimistic. And then, yeah, with these, I don't even know if they've ever had a name collectively, but this tag team that debuted with Malcolm Bivens, obviously we've talked about Malcolm Bivens and what an asset he can be. And this is one of the things that I planned on mentioning on this show anyway, that they need to start bringing Malcolm Bivens in, because he has been such a great asset to their social media, just filming his own stuff that has been extremely entertaining and involving the NXT roster. And he can continue to do that, hopefully. Here it seems like he's just a mouthpiece for two guys who probably, like the AOP and Paul Ellering, probably aren't supposed to talk all that much, but he's capable of being extremely entertaining, as we all know. These two individuals are named Rinku Singh and Saurav Gurjar. They have been tagging together on NXT house shows for about 2 years, I want to say, maybe a little bit less, but I feel like it's been about 2 years. And in the limited amount that I've been exposed to them through dark matches and house shows, I've been perfectly impressed. I mean, it's not like, again, like with Vink, I'm not through the roof, but I haven't seen anything that gives me pause. I like what I've seen from them as, again, like an AOP style team. And this fun fact about Rinku Singh, if anyone recognizes that name, it's because he is the Indian baseball player whom the film, Disney's film, The Million Dollar Arm, was based upon. It starred John Hamm as either his coach or his manager or something like that. So he is that Indian star baseball player, and that's legitimately him, The Million Dollar Arm. And I wouldn't be surprised if this tag team goes well, if they start referring to him as The Million Dollar Arm to cash in on that.
All right. I want to say, earlier I said Middle Eastern, I meant to say East Indian. And now I'm wondering if I wrote that in my podcast, in my recap as well. Nate, on the relative merit of these angles or / debuts.
Yeah, no, I was also kind of interested, to see, or not interested, rather, surprised to see some of these, you know, debuts and the return of Io Shirai tonight, simply for the, you know, kind of the same reason you guys brought up. We normally see these after the WrestleMania season, or post takeover. I don't know if those plans kind of changed, got derailed due to not having a takeover. this time of year, due to what's going on, or if things got shooken up, you know, just due to what's going on. I'm sure it's probably a mix of all of it. I was really looking forward to the crowd pop when Io Shirai came back. So it is a little bit of a disappointment that she got, you know, she did have to come back to an empty crowd. But I guess that could also be said about, you know, the pop Stone Cold Steve Austin would have got, or, you know, the pop that Edge would have got, a few weeks ago. So, I guess it just kind of is what it is in the time we're in. But, it sucks, but I think they're doing a good job with what they've got. I was really impressed with these two guys. I already don't remember their names, and I probably won't for a while. I know one was saying it was Devier or something along those lines. But I was really impressed with what I saw out of them tonight. They just had this really vicious streak about them. And just where they were also kind of, they were speaking in, you know, I'm assuming it was, an Indian dialect or something along those lines, but they were speaking in a foreign language. And I just kind of like got this head shrinkers type vibe to them. It was like almost like, and I wrote this down in the hits and misses. It was kind of a head shrinkers meets AOP. And I felt like it was kind of AOP because they brought Bivens in, in that angle there. So I'm really looking forward to see where these guys go. I feel like the NXT tag division, you know, as we talked about going into the Dusty Cup, the tag team division's kind of been in a little weird flux. There hasn't been really many, with the exception of like the Undisputed Era, there haven't really been a whole lot of tag teams that, have kind of come up and stood out in the ranks there, which is why they ended up putting Pete Dunne and Matt Riddle together. It's kind of nice to see this beast of a tag team come up and lay out one of the tag team champions, which does bring up a good, which does kind of lead me to another point, which isn't really part of this question, but it's something that is certainly a question. They kind of alluded to the fact that Pete Dunne wasn't able to be there tonight. I'm wondering if that means he's stuck in the UK, and if he's stuck in the UK during this travel ban, what does that mean for the NXT tag team titles? Because one half of the champions are over here and the other half's on the other side of the pond. So it's kind of curious to see what happens there, if they're able to somehow get done over here or what they do, what sort of an angle they pull out, for that. But, curious to see where that goes. I was really glad to see Io Shirai back, as I said, and I'm glad that she is going to be in this match. It was kind of the number one contenders ladder match. When I saw that it was going to be Xia Li versus Aaliyah, I kind of had exactly the same thought as Tom. I'm like, oh, good, that they're finally going to, do something with Xia Li. They're going to have, she's probably not going to win this number one contenders match, but at least they're probably going to put her in that spot, because I can't see Aaliyah beating her. And then it dawned on me that, and it was right before they actually showed it on TV. It dawned on me that Xia Li was the one that broke her nose. And I'm like, ooh, I don't know, maybe they'll play into that a little bit. And so I kind of started thinking that, maybe Xia Li's going to lose, and this might be some sort of a return push for Aaliyah. Because a lot of times, when somebody comes back from an injury, you don't immediately squash them. Or they'll have, not necessarily squash them, but if they're going to lose a match, similar to what happened tonight, that, they kind of put at least a little bit of a fight in. Obviously you had that Xia Li attack backstage. I don't know if, it was Aaliyah or anything like that. I mean, Aaliyah certainly looked happy about it. I'm assuming it's probably just because she thought she was about to, get a buy into the match itself. Then obviously the curveball was thrown and Shirai came out, and it was a great surprise. And, it was a pretty nice match. So it was, fun to watch there. Let's see, what else?
And it could be as simple as, like, it's maybe Vanessa Bourne trying to do her dirty work. And then we do get kind of this little mini feud with Xia Li and Aaliyah, which you might as well do, because Xia Li did legitimately
break her nose.
Aaliyah out of action.
Yeah. So, I mean, that could be as well. I was thinking about that, but I couldn't think of the name Vanessa Bourne, so I just didn't even bring it up. But,
How quickly we forget.
Right? with my brain, I'm lucky I remembered the name Aaliyah. And that's just after watching her, you know, an hour and a half ago. I don't know. I think I might have touched on just about everything there. So
I think we will go back to Durrell for to crack open the second beer.
Yes, sir. Okay. Now going to that main event and the promos that were cut and everything that was did between Ciampa and Johnny. I like how they're playing Johnny into now he's almost like a prick, because of his rejection from the crowd and all of this, and the way how he was trying to carry himself and how he was cutting the promo and stuff like that, and trying to take no cause of blame into it. Where do y'all see that match going, and how do you see that moving forward? Because even with them introducing, I guess, Killer Cross, and I feel like he might be a reason why they let Johnny win, and they setting up the next challenger for Ciampa to keep, who's probably the number one face in NXT hot right now. How do y'all see that going, and do you see the inclusion of Killer Cross maybe somehow finding where they're going to be in this empty arena? And how do y'all like how Triple H was a part of this tonight?
We touched on this a little. I thought this was a good use of Triple H. I think when something is this serious and then they destroy the PC, that it makes sense to have Triple H get into this story somewhere, to go all the way up the authority line, and rather than get the aging and part-time William Regal in there, have Triple H do it, give the segment as much weight as it deserves. I do kind of dig what you're saying about Killer Cross maybe not necessarily trying to help, but inadvertently causing the heel to win this match and then giving Ciampa something to do. I think Johnny is owed his victory here, although this feud has mostly been about the heels winning, whoever was heel at the time, not every time, but largely that's what it's been about. As far as the match itself, I'm kind of expecting some sort of street fight. They didn't say exactly, but he said, I'm just going to give you a ring somewhere and I'm going to give you a referee, and the referee's just going to say when it's over. And that's what he said. It was just the wording that he used. The referee's just there to say when it's over. I don't think that this will be conventional, although what can they do to raise the stakes on what they've already done? Tom?
So I think that Triple H made sense here, but yes, like you said, it's better to have him there than Regal. But even more than that, it was probably just a matter of necessity, because even though, and I did have to Google this real quick, even though Triple H and Regal are only 1 year separated in age, Regal, who is the elder, and this is no knock on Regal, he definitely appears to be older, and Triple H is obviously in better physical health, for whatever that may mean in the spectrum of how people are being affected by coronavirus. But Triple H has obviously already appeared on multiple empty arena shows, from the PC and now from Full Sail, for WWE. So it made sense to have him here, and the gravitas was perfectly fine. Even though Regal would have done the exact same thing and done very well as well, if the world hadn't gone haywire in the meantime. As for the match, from where I'm sitting right now, I would be disappointed if Killer Cross got involved in this feud in any way. I already laid out earlier how if he has to get involved, I do feel like he should be Johnny's heavy, which just adds to the mountain that Ciampa has to climb to fell Johnny, and adds to Johnny's credibility as a heel, rather than diverts Ciampa into a different feud. Although, of course, it does also seem realistic that Johnny will win this match, which I would agree is the way that they should go, since he's the recently turned character. And instead of perpetuating the feud, they instead move into Ciampa versus Cross. Unless, again, and perhaps just out of convenience, that Ciampa versus Cross just becomes another chapter in Ciampa Gargano. And this is all perfectly speculative. I think if I had to put money on it, I would say Cross just had his video debut at this moment, and he's not going to actually have anything to do with either of these guys. I'm looking forward to the match even more than I was before because of this suggested post-produced aspect to it. It seems like they're probably going to film it like a movie. And I know I keep on throwing his name out there all the time in relation to these things. And I feel like we can pinpoint his style enough that once we've seen something, we can say, okay, that was a Borash. He's not filming all this stuff. And for all I know, he might not film this one. But what immediately leaps to my mind is finding an abandoned building. And yeah, like Nate suggested, just going in there and wreaking havoc and maybe destroying part of the building in the process. That's actually very similar to something that I've done in a couple of my short films, finding abandoned buildings and going in and wreaking havoc. And part of that, because it's just a shoestring, like me and my buddy going in there and trying to tell a story and set up the camera and also be the actors and also figure out the shot composition and how it's going to be edited together and everything. It's very, very shoestring. And that's also why I have responded to Jeremy Borash's filmmaking and things like the Final Deletion, because I feel like we have similar sensibilities in that regard, and I understand what he's going for. So my fingers are crossed that is what we are going to get out of this match.
Nate, go ahead.
Yeah, kind of more or less exactly parroting what Tom said. I don't think I kind of hope Killer Cross doesn't have really have an involvement in the match. I really want to see the two of them have a match and a clean win. As much as I like the Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa feud, and I have liked it, I kind of also think it might be time for them to do other things and kind of get away from each other for a little while. In a way, I'd like to see a clean finish, but at the same time, and this is actually something Tom just brought up, and it kind of made a click in my head. It would also be cool to see if something like that did happen, where Killer Cross interfered and it did allow the heel Gargano to win, and it set something up for Ciampa to do and have maybe a short feud with Killer Cross, because right now you got to keep him busy while Velveteen Dream is going for the NXT title. Because obviously, Ciampa wants Goldie. That's his thing. He wants his Goldie back. So you got to keep him busy for a little while. And if he's not busy with Gargano, well, maybe he's going to be busy with Killer Cross. So maybe that's why they brought it up there. Or like I said earlier in the night, maybe it was just a good place to put the segment to hype a big, big name coming in that people are excited about. And just put it in a prominent spot, at the main event with Triple H and arguably two of the faces of NXT. So I don't know. I'm not sure how it's going to play out, but I do like that idea. I really like the idea of them doing almost like a Final Deletion style match. Not necessarily a Final Deletion style match. I'd like to see it a little bit more of a traditional wrestling match in the sense that there's a wrestling ring. But at the same time, I'd like to see, something a little different. And if they are going to be in an abandoned building as they're touting with, no set, no lights, no, rigging, no nothing, not even a barricade or mats around the ring, if that's how they go, it would kind of be cool just to see, maybe the pinfall has to take place in the ring, but they're going to brawl all over this place and, tear this abandoned building up. That would be really cool to see. And, obviously, with what Tom just mentioned, Jeremy Borash special, I think, taking the talents that he put into something like the Final Deletion would be basically right in the wheelhouse for something like that. So I'm on board with pretty much all of that.
Okay. You know what? I'm sorry.
All right. Durrell, go ahead with number three.
Okay, here we go. Now, my number three would be this. Now, since they had Keith Lee explain why he did what he did, and they had all the players come out there, are they setting up this triple threat match? And once they do this triple threat match, because they had these three guys, especially Djokovic and Lee, going against each other so much, will they move on from this? Are you hoping to see them move on from this feud, or you wouldn't mind two of them breaking off and going into something and one other guy going off to another thing, and what would that be? And what are your aspects of this triple threat match would be?
Yeah, I was going to throw it to Nate first on this one, but something is amiss. Something's going on over there, so I'll wait just to be sure.
Oh no, my wife was yelling at somebody in her chat room.
Oh, okay, got it. Then I will after I make a quick thought here. I've really liked this. I really liked the Lee Dijakovic Priest stuff. It has been sometimes with heat, sometimes not with a lot. But I've liked the work that that the three have continued to do. I really feel that Priest. I mean, this isn't even really an opinion at this point anymore. Priest is a more fully formed character than Dijakovic by quite a bit. And I dig Dijakovic, but he's just a cool guy. Like, if that's all he's going to be, that's fine. But that's what he is. Priest is a guy who's desperate to be seen as cool. And he's desperate to live forever. And he's all these things that he is. And I really am digging what he does. If they move that championship, I hope they move it to Priest. And part of me hopes that happens, but this is largely based on what the plan is for Keith Lee. I feel like Keith Lee is the man right now, regardless. And I don't believe having a relatively short reign would hurt him. But I'd be fine with that. Dijakovic with the title, I don't know what they do with him. I have no idea what they do with the Dijakovic championship reign at this time. Although maybe that championship could help define him. So maybe that's the reason to do it. I feel like any of the three have at least some chance here. So I'm very much looking forward to the match. The segment here was decent. I like that in the past, the babyface would have continued to be surprised to learn that he had attacked the wrong person. Like he couldn't have used that week to watch the show, or they would have shown it on video in front of him and it would have been very silly. And I thought that he stayed in kind of a realistic space. I thought that Dijakovic stayed in a realistic space, like, hey, apologize or not, you took food off my table. I thought that was pretty decent. I liked this segment in general. But I really, really am digging what Priest is doing in this heel role. And I think that's what I'd like to see, even though my favorite of these three guys all around continues to be Keith Lee. Nate, go ahead.
Now, Keith Lee is absolutely the star out of the three. You know, not to knock anything on Dijakovic or Damian Priest, but Keith Lee is by far my favorite, and I think he's got the biggest upside, overall. I think he's, right now, I think he's got the best character. He's got the best, I wouldn't say the best in-ring work, because, I mean, they're all phenomenal talents. So, I don't want to necessarily single him out as his better worker, but, they're all phenomenal. Can't really single one out over the other, but Keith Lee definitely continues to be my favorite, and I think he's the one that's going to stand out and shine the most out of the feud, which I think is it says something. Obviously he's the champ, but I think he's the one that they have their eye on to move up to the main roster, probably sooner rather than later, which I'm hoping is a little bit later, because I'd rather see him on NXT, but hey, that's just me. And I'm sure probably the rest of you guys too, but the rest of this angle. I do like the fact that Keith Lee didn't really, he acknowledged the fact that, he did get attacked by Dijakovic last week. It wasn't like, like you were just saying, he couldn't watch the show or see any clips or highlights on social media throughout the course of the week. That it was a little bit acknowledged. It was a little bit, more real than we'd probably see on a normal episode of like Raw or SmackDown or something along those lines. With a babyface would be confused and stuff like that. Oh my God, you attacked me. But so I like that. Priest, Okay. Both Priest and Dijakovic, I definitely think, have some work to do on their characters. Priest, I really liked that whole brooding kind of, and I hate to make the comparison to like NXT Baron Corbin, because I was not a really big fan of NXT Baron Corbin, but he kind of had that badass brooding feel to him. Yeah, just the name Priest and the flames and the, you know, his entrance and all this stuff, you know, in the graphics. I really liked that incarnation of Damian Priest. And then he kind of became like, we actually made the comparison to like A Night at the Roxbury, you know, he became like this partier with these girls, but he still had this dark and brooding thing. So I'm still kind of like, I like Priest. I like what he brings to the ring. I like, you know, his mic work tonight I thought was great. But it's just that it's just this weird gimmick where he's like this dark brooding guy, but then he's a partier. And I don't know. I know all of the dark brooding people I know aren't partiers. So it's just, it's just a little bit lost on me maybe, but yeah, I don't know. But it, you know, as far as Dijakovic, you know, we've said it before, you just said it now, Kelly, he's just a guy, you know, he doesn't really have a defined gimmick. He's, you know, he's a great in-ring performer. I think he's okay on the mic. But it's like, he's just, I don't know, he's just this dude from Worcester, Massachusetts. And, you know, he's a good hand in the ring, good wrestler. He goes out there, has some great matches. But, you know, who really, you know, we say this late, who's Tegan Knox? Who's on a Dijakovic? So I'd like a little bit more out of that, you know, kind of flesh him out there. And I think that would make him, both him and Priest, if their characters kind of like just had a little cleanup, if you will. You know, maybe a little revamp. I think that would definitely help the two of them out. But as far as I think this is definitely going to turn into a triple threat. Last week, and I can't remember if I said this on the podcast we didn't record, the podcast we had and actually didn't record, or the re-recording we did the following day. But I was also speculating that this may turn into a four-way with Cameron Grimes. And after Cameron Grimes' involvement in this other match tonight, I think that was the answer there. I don't think it's going to be a fatal four-way with him in there, but I do think it's going to be a triple threat with the three of these guys, Priest, Dijakovic, and Lee. I still want to say my money's going to be on Lee walking away. I don't think they're going to take the title off him just yet. I think they want to have him probably get one or two more, you know, really good and you know, just good secure wins under his belt before they take it off of him, and either have him, you know, kind of start going for the NXT title, or you know, potentially a main roster call up. You know, it's then again, it is WrestleMania season, so if we do end up seeing, and I know that, you know, I know they want him on the main roster. So typically after WrestleMania season, we will see a lot of call ups. So if for some reason he does lose the North American title, I was going to say a takeover, but at one of these upcoming NXT shows where they're having the takeover matches, if we do end up seeing him lose it, then I don't know, maybe we'll see a call up soon. But you know, my money personally is him holding on to the belt a little bit longer and probably losing it later on in the year, moving up at that point. But yeah, I do like what we get going on so far with these three guys.
Yeah, I'm going to say either Priest or Grimes is the next champion. Whether that happens here, I don't know. I love the Priest character. I don't think there's a damn thing wrong with it. And I tell you what, I went to school for acting, and I know a lot of dark emo people that are also partiers. They're out there, I promise.
All right, I'll believe you.
And yeah, they're weirdos, as you would think. They're not usually built like Damian Priest, I will say that.
Fair enough.
Right. Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, well, we've been saying possible call-up for Keith Lee after WrestleMania. I believe that things like that might be on hold right now. I think that would be wise anyway. We'll see if WWE agrees. But my quick answer here is just that, yep, Dominic Dijakovic does not have a character, even though he's very capable of having one. And his ongoing, never-ending feud with Keith Lee, his bro feud with Keith Lee, is well past its sell-by date for me anyway. And I know he's very capable of having great matches with different types of wrestlers. And on the other side of it, Damian Priest indeed I feel like I understand his character and what makes him tick, and he feels fresher. So to answer Darrell's question, anything with Dijakovic involved in the mix is going to feel old to me here, and anything with Priest involved in the mix is going to feel a bit fresher. So I guess I'm 50-50 going into this triple threat since they're both in it. But yeah, but hopefully coming out of this, it's more Priest oriented.
All right, Darrell, what more do you have for us?
Okay, now we have, I think we got two spots taken and one more spot to go in the women's ladder match. Who do you think that last spot go to? Do you think it would go to Dakota Kai? And I see this set up for Io Shirai being the one to take that ladder match. You can tell me about that. Then also we had Samuel Shaw video. What you got? Is this a reintroduction of him? And what do you guys think about that? And lastly, would be this right here in that women's match. Did you feel like they was eyeing or making it that Candice LeRae could be potentially going here also with how she did the Gargano escape to finish Caden Carter?
I was very interested in how they were going to produce Candice tonight because she has not been on TV since Johnny did this latest turn. I don't think she's been on at all. So I was very interested to see what they were going to do. And then she comes out, they don't mention the relationship, none of that. Like, it's not like this is a secret to anyone, but it's just kind of like if they don't call attention to it, then they don't have to have her go down the dark side or have or try to deal with what Johnny's doing and what's going on with him right now. So, and then she starts doing the Gargano escape. She had to do it twice to finish it. And of course it's called what it's called. So you cannot, you can't shy away from it. So I don't know what they're going to do there. I continue to find it interesting, but I don't, it seems like there's no, if there was a clear idea of whether they were going to call attention to it or not, I think they would have made it clearer. But it was not a clear presentation tonight. I'll tell you that until tonight, I was sure that Dakota Kai would be in the match and she would win it. I'm still sure she's going to be in the match. I'm way less sure she's going to win it now. Rhea's probably going to go through a few people before she wins. Tom has got me convinced that Dakota Kai is the next women's champion. And you know me, I very much want to be convinced of that. That is exactly what I want to be the case. And I hope that's true. But I wouldn't be surprised if Io comes back and wins this. If she doesn't win this, she's going to have the high spots of the match. She's going to be the star of the match regardless. So yeah, the match with Candice versus Caden, I thought was fine. 4.5 minutes, a little soft at times, I thought, but yeah, it was okay. And, Io versus Aaliyah, it was 80 seconds. So, it was what it needed to be. Io hit a couple of her better spots. God, that moonsault is stupid beautiful. Really dug that, Tom.
I agree with what you said about the forthcoming ladder match and Dakota Kai and the likelihood and the trajectory. So that. And as for LeRae Carter, I did find it interesting that this was originally announced as LeRae Martinez. And one would imagine that Martinez is hopefully staying at home with her children or whatever she's doing. And that's why it got changed. So ultimately this match ended up being whereas I would have been able to envision Martinez getting in the match, this ended up being more of a foregone conclusion situation. And I felt like where sometimes I can stomach a foregone conclusion or the match can be good enough that it doesn't matter. This one was hurt by that. So I had trouble investing in it until indeed that final moment where that's how Candice LeRae won. I can't remember the last time I saw her win with that particular maneuver. So it did raise my eyebrow a little bit, although I didn't think much of it until later in the night after the show on social media. And I did not actually watch this video. I scrolled past it, but I saw the heading saying that Candice LeRae was interviewed after her match, saying that she is optimistic about her chances. She's excited for this upcoming number one contenders ladder match. But when asked about how she feels about her husband's actions, she decided to not make a comment. So they're specifically asking her about it, if not on the show, at least on .com content, and pointing out the fact that she currently does not have an answer to it, which could be an awkward way of addressing it and not really addressing it, or it could be seeds planted for something further down the line with Candice, which would not be dissimilar from what they did with her the last time that Johnny went heel, where she just sort of started acting a little more sinister and coming out wearing black lipstick. And then for Sam Shaw, or the man who is named after a TV show and a movie and comes out to a theme song that's a derivative of a different TV show, Dexter Loomis, I kind of got a kick of him getting a little video here. I do think it's a reintroduction, I guess, for his sake, even though I like Arturo Huas better. For his sake, hopefully it's a better predictor of near future exposure than it was for Arturo Huas, who didn't get any follow through at all. But the reason I got a kick out of it is because the couple of times that I've seen Dexter Loomis make his Stranger Things like entrance in front of a live crowd, it's kind of felt like an empty arena, and it's just awkward and weird, and you don't know what to make of it, which when I've said that on the podcast, Kelly has retorted to say, well, that kind of works for him. So I laugh and say that this is fitting for him, but it also probably is a fitting scenario. He's probably not going to be hurt all that much, if at all, by being in the empty arena setting.
You know, I missed whatever video he got. I saw him live in a match a few weeks ago before the world did what it did, and now these shows aren't happening. But I saw him work a match against Eric Bugenhagen, and Loomis went over. And I didn't know that he was going to be even on that show. But yeah, he was still very much doing the Dexter Loomis we saw in that tournament. So I'm not sure how I missed that. I only ran away from the screen one time to go to the bathroom. And I guess that must be when it happened. I thought it was I went during a commercial, but I must have missed it at the beginning of a segment or something. Nate?
Well, don't feel too bad, because I'm also scratching my head as to what video we're talking about. And I didn't leave my computer. I did have a moment where I switched. I've got two computers. I got a Mac that I do some video editing on, and I got a PC. So I switched from one computer to another with watching NXT tonight, and I'm wondering if maybe that was when it happened, because I did. It was during a commercial, but yeah, I don't recall seeing this video either. So it's like I said, don't feel too bad. That makes two of us. So I can't really speak to that, but I feel like Tom did a damn good job there. As far as Candice LeRae, I'm really happy to see her back on TV, because you know I was kind of wondering to see, you know, when she was coming back and if they were going to make any mention to, to obviously Gargano's heel turn. And they, you know, apparently they did on social media. They didn't really hear tonight other than the fact that, she did use, Gargano escape, to get the win. But, it's a little bit of a strange position for her to be in. We talked about it a couple weeks ago. Yeah, it's kind of like the Renee Young and Dean Ambrose thing. You know, when Dean Ambrose went heel and, you know, Renee Young had to kind of just sit there on commentary and just kind of take it. So, it was a little strange there. But, we'll see where it goes. As far as the ladder match, I think Dakota Kai also is probably going to be the final participant in that match. They've got that. They announced the that second chance match tonight. Dakota Kai is front and center in the match graphic. So we've talked about it. We kind of thought she was going to somehow weasel her way into that match. And it makes sense that this probably will be where it's going to happen. However, I'm also on board with Kelly here. I don't think she's going to win anymore now. I wouldn't say the chances are zero. I mean, she's definitely still got a chance of winning this, especially with the trajectory that she's been on, and this, you know, kind of where she's got this new heater with Raquel Gonzalez. You know, makes sense that, you know, maybe they're going to give her the rub and push her up there, especially, you know, too, on top of all of that, with just the history that she's had with Rhea Ripley, you know, dating back to War Games and even before that. So, you know, we might see her get the win, but my money is probably more on Io now that she's come back. I think from everybody that's in that match so far, she kind of seems to be like the one that kind of stands out, that, you know, hasn't really had a rub with Rhea Ripley yet, for the title anyway, or in any capacity that says she might be going for the title. So it makes sense. I think that might be where they're going. I don't really think I have too much else to add on that. And I didn't see the video segment, so I don't have anything to add on that. So back to you guys.
It was pretty much just Loomis like slinking around in the ring, right, Darrell?
Oh, sorry, I had Darrell. okay, there he is. I had him muted. Sorry about that. So I think that ties a bow on Darrell's call, and we will get to the rest. And I assume, Darrell, we will talk to you soon enough.
Thanks, man.
Yes, sir. Y'all keep safe.
All right. You do the same, man. Take care.
Okay. So we got some matches. Many of them were – it was a weird show. It was definitely not – I mean, this is kind of a go-home show. It's a weird show to define. Let's go to Riddle and Strong, the – de facto main event. They called it the main event, but the main event, of course, was the Triple H and DIY segment. Riddle and Strong, very good mat stuff here. I mean, the first 4 or 5 minutes of this was just both of them trying to get their footing. They had more resets than you usually see in a match. Lots of resets in the first few minutes of that. This went 10:50, including commercials. That is assuming 4 minutes of action during the 4 minute commercial, which probably isn't the case. But yeah, it went 10:50, pretty short for a main event, but as stated, not really a main event. The big takeaway here is Pete Dunne isn't around. That of course gave Bivens a kayfabe reason to introduce his new tag team. Who he did not name. So we don't know if they're going to go by Rinku Singh and Saurav Gurjar, but he didn't name them. So we don't know. This is obviously, we were working towards broserweights against grizzled young veterans. Grizzled young veterans were not mentioned. I assume they're not here either. Assuming that they got home. But I don't know that for sure. So at any rate, Riddle and Strong, main event, kind of. Tom?
I feel like I say this about the Undisputed Era a lot. Like, I think these guys are fantastic, some of the best wrestlers in the world right now. But on NXT, we end up seeing them feuding with the same guys for a long period of time, to the point where the matches just end up, like, my eyes kind of glaze over. So I had very few takeaways from the actual content of this match because I had trouble focusing on it. Just felt like another been there, done that. Like, why is this even happening? And then, yeah, sure, they used it to set the stage for the tag team thing, which is fine because, as I'll say regarding the Oney Lorcan Martin Stone match, I you got to do something. As foolhardy as it may be, considering how uncertain things are right now, as I suggested earlier, we've long lamented how there are very few tag teams in NXT to work with right now, at least on TV, and if you don't have one half of your tag team champions at your disposal at the moment, go ahead and build up some other teams. So yeah, just again, like most of the rest of the night, pretty straightforward stuff, but it was fine.
Martin Stone, this guy says,
Oh my. Yeah. I'm still doing that.
Yeah, it's when he's still working under both names. So, you know.
That's right. He is. And I first saw him in MLW as Martin Stone, and I just haven't been able to shake it.
Yep. Nate, on our more or less main event.
Yeah, no, kind of similar thoughts to Tom here. There was nothing bad about this match on the whole, but you know, we have seen Undisputed Era and the Broserweights, you know, feuding for quite some time now. So I did kind of feel like it was a little bit been there, done that. So I too was finding myself having a little bit of trouble, keeping my focus on the match. That's not to take anything away from the match. I still think it was a good contest between the two of them. Matt Riddle is, you know, a fantastic, fantastic performer. I can't say enough about Roderick Strong. He is when you get him in the ring, he's going to have a good match with anybody. So, you know, you get these two together and obviously they're going to have a good match, and that's what they did. No more, no less. So, nothing good or really bad to say about it other than it happened. And, it was our main event. Very similar again to what Tom said, you know, if you can't have your NXT champions on a show right now, just due to the nature of this whole coronavirus, why not build up another tag team? And clearly they had this team waiting. We've been waiting to see Malcolm Bivens actually make a debut on NXT TV. So, you guys have been talking about, Tom's been talking about him now for quite some time. So it's fun to actually see him, get this spot and actually, make this debut, introduce these two just monsters. Like I said earlier tonight, I got this head shrinkers meets AOP type vibe from them, which is a kind of a strange combination, but at the same time, if you think about it, it kind of works. I really did like that. I also said earlier tonight that, we don't have many tag teams. It's nice to actually have a solid tag team waiting in the wings here, so I'm not going to harp too much more on that. Overall, it was a good segment, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what this new team brings in the future.
So we had three more or less enhancement matches. Your mileage may vary, but at any rate, we knew who was winning all three of these matches, so I'm going to roll them together. And they were Tahuti Miles against Killian Dane. Miles has worked on Raw a little under a different name, Elijah something or other. I can't remember what it is. But Tahuti Miles is that's his real name, against Killian Dane. So Dane winning a couple of things so he can look good for the next guy who beats him. That went 3:42. Cameron Grimes against Tony Nese. This was not quite an enhancement match, but they did frame it pretty clearly that Grimes was the likely winner. They said this would be a big win for Nese, although they did talk about the fact that he's a former Cruiserweight champion, but they definitely set it up so it could be Grimes. I really, really dug this. I'm just going to get that out of the way. I say that about Grimes every day, every week, but I'm going to say it again right now, because he just, the way he scraps, the way he transitions, he's just dirty. He's grimy. I love his name because he's grimy. 5:39 that went. 3 minutes and 41 seconds was Burch and Lorcan over Thorne and Vink. I guess we're more or less covered that. So anything on our various enhancement style matches, Tom?
Yeah, I'm so glad you rolled these together, because there's so little to say, and I feel like I've killed most of my points on them already. It basically comes down to the matches were fine. I particularly enjoyed Miles versus Dane. I thought it was a good meat and potatoes match, and it was a good way to put Dane over and introduce to TV someone who has been, I believe, one of the premier people that they've had signed to the PC at the moment. I he's another guy that I don't know too much about, but I've seen him in one dark match. And if you've made it to a Full Sail dark match, then they probably think pretty highly of you, at least at the tier that you've reached to that point. But it's just like, how optimistic are you that you're going to be able to put together a lot of TV moving forward week to week, that you're really setting this many developing things? Like, is it really that important to keep Killian Dane looking strong for the next guy right now rather than just keeping him home, you know, which is the safer thing right now. So that's my question. And I would also add regarding the tag match that although obviously Vink and Thorn are a job team, I just question, I added to my points, of course, about like assuming that they're just working with what they have a lot by necessity to build up their divisions and in this case the tag division. I just feel like I've seen Lorcan and Stone lose. I don't know why I said move. I feel like I've seen them lose so much that for as good as they are, I just don't find them credible anymore. So when I see them go over, even though I know these other guys are just a job team, I'm just like, really? Like, I'm supposed to buy these guys as a team who can win? And am I supposed to look forward to watching them wrestle the Undisputed Era again or wrestle Riddle and Dunn again? It's just, it's I don't know. I feel bad saying it because they're both great, particularly Lorcan. And the act is fun, but I just feel like I've seen them lose so much that they don't feel credible anymore.
Nate, on the Enhancement Affairs.
Yeah, they might not seem credible anymore, but I still like seeing them anytime they come out. They're my guilty pleasure. They're my guilty tag team pleasure. But yeah, we talked already about the tag team match a little bit, so I'll kind of stick away from there. I really got invested in Dane and Killian Dane and Tahuti Miles. Tahuti Miles, the first thing I actually wrote down in my hits and misses was Tahuti Who, because the name wasn't one I heard before. When you just brought up, you know, he wrestled under the name Elijah King. I looked it up real quick, and you know, he was on Raw in a backstage segment against Braun Strowman, and I do remember that segment. So I guess I have seen him before, but I really did enjoy this. So I mean, you know, it wasn't quite I guess it kind of was a squash match, but it wasn't like, you know, Dane just went right out there and took him to school. It was definitely a, you know, meat and potato style match. Miles, he like, they kept building him up on commentary. They kept talking about, stuff at the Performance Center and whatnot. So they were kind of hyping him up a little bit. So even though he lost, I feel like, you know, they're debuting him tonight, and they probably have something in mind for him. Assuming, you know, where he did lose, I'm assuming, you know, whatever they have in mind for him probably isn't, over the top, over the moon, anything like that. But, it may be something, like Tyler Breeze type level or something like that. And I say Breeze because he's just one we haven't talked about yet tonight. But no, it was a really nice, really cool match. I was kind of expecting, especially when there was a guy I'd never heard of before, I was really expecting just a quick Killian Dane, 60-second squash match. So even though it wasn't, too much longer than that, I enjoyed it. I liked it, and I really liked what I saw out of Miles. So really cool there. I also do kind of question the idea, of keeping Killian Dane strong right now. I mean, did they really necessarily need to do this match tonight? Would it just have made more sense to keep these two guys at home and, maybe add a couple more minutes on to the other matches throughout the night? Because, obviously, this is a very wrestling heavy show. I mean, just counting, I think we had, nine matches here? So, no, not
seven.
Nine. Seven. I had a couple.
Seven is heavy.
Seven is a little on the heavy side. And, so you get seven matches. So there's 14 people. Like 14 people if they're just one-on-ones. And obviously we had some more than that because they were tag team. We had the priests come in. So, we got, let's say, 20 people that, are now in a building together. If this was indeed live, not pre-taped or anything, I'm not 100% sure if any of these matches are pre-taped because I know they're taping a whole bunch of stuff going up to WrestleMania. But let's assume they're not. You've got 20 people in a building together that, should they really be at this point? So I don't know. And that's not including, cameramen and the refs and anybody else, any of the other production crew. So I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I question it, but it is what it is. And then Cameron Grimes and Tony Nese. This was a match that I didn't know I wanted to see until Tony Nese actually came out. Because, obviously, as you guys have listened to us in the past, we're all big fans of Cameron Grimes here on the show. I am no different. I love what Grimes is bringing to the table right now. And I'm kind of a low-key fan of Tony Nese. You know, he really hasn't done a whole hell of a lot, in the WWE system, mostly, 205 Live, Cruiserweight stuff, NXT here and there. But, you know, he's a good hand in the ring, solid worker. I like what he brings to the ring. So I knew going into this, Grimes was probably going to get the win, but I enjoyed it. It was a short match, very short match, but it was still fun. They did a lot of mat wrestling at the beginning, which personally I'm a fan of. Not necessarily everybody is. I think if this was actually shot in front of a full sale crowd, the crowd would probably be a little bit quiet for it. But at least me personally, I dug it. And then, there was a couple spots in that match too, like Tony Nese's springboard moonsault, where, that was just a thing of beauty. And I thought he might actually get the win there. But of course, Grimes, busted out his double stomp, and the name of it is escaping me off the top of my head, but he busted out the double stomp to get the win. The cave in. Thank you. But he busted that out to get the win. So, I was, happy to see that as well. And that, I mentioned this earlier in the night, but because this match happened and Grimes was not part of that angle with the North American title angle later on in the night, I don't think he's necessarily going to be involved in that North American title angle, like I've been speculating. But, still, I think they've got high hopes for him, and he's going to be doing something cool. So that's all that matters to me anyway.
All right, we have one more match, and we've got one more email. We've got three emails, but two of them were requests for if there was no content this week. They're asking us for a list of best finishers and a list for who might be the face of NXT. I'm not going to be doing that. I'm going to be saving that, assuming that we've got some no content weeks coming up, because I think that could be really fun, but I don't want to make this show needlessly long, because we felt the need to tack them on here. So first, let's talk about the opening match, Tyler Breeze versus Austin Theory. This went 13:23 when you factor in commercials, and was probably in reality a couple minutes shorter than that. At any rate, funny/silly ending to this, with Austin Theory allowing his youthful exuberance and cockiness to get the better of him, essentially losing because of the kind of thing that would cost Tyler Breeze when he was going full Tyler Breeze in NXT 5 years ago. So Theory starts trying to take a selfie video of himself doing his finisher to Breeze. And Breeze, of course, wriggles free, hits the now here's one I can't remember, beauty shot, and beats Theory. This seems like it would stop Theory dead, but he's still on his way up. He can do a couple losses here. There's nothing in Breeze if he loses all his matches, and I approve of a mini feud here. I dug this, and it seemed like an easy one to call beforehand, and they surprised me, and NXT doesn't do that very often. Tom?
If they hadn't announced this ahead of time, you could lump it in with the other ones. It's like, is it really a great idea to be bringing all these people into this one space? And that said, I'm sure that they are practicing displacement. I'm sure that the wrestlers aren't just all huddled backstage together or anything. I'm sure that there's some displacement going on, and they're being mindful to an extent. But this is them delivering on an announced match. And I strongly feel that this is the very best match presentation that we have gotten since WWE was forced to go to empty arenas. Not only are they doing the same thing as Raw showed us on Monday and finally losing the empty seats in the background and just focusing on what's going on in the ring, and they've adjusted where the hard cam is pointing, but they tightened up on the camera and they focused much more, even on the jib shots that are usually designed to show sort of a bird's eye angle, but also the crowd in the background. Even the jib shots were tighter to only show the ring, to really get in close to the wrestlers' faces. And especially, like you mentioned earlier in the show, Kelly, with Austin Theory jawing as much as he did, we really got to hear all of that. And it might sound like a strange comparison at first, but my very favorite thing about Charlotte Flair is that when she is losing a match, she still, if it's a big match, if she's losing a big match, she will still get over with her mouth. And she'll be shouting insults at, like, Sasha Banks, like, "You'll never beat me." And then she immediately gets kicked in the face and loses. And I love that because it's a great character moment, and Charlotte Flair can do it even with the roar of a crowd behind her. And Austin Theory didn't have that tonight. We were able to hear every single thing he was saying. And he was able to, with character moments and with little moments like trying to take the selfie video, get over as a character and as an up and coming wrestler while not pushing Tyler Breeze down into what I've been saying is like the Oney Lorcan, Danny Burch territory of like, okay, they're just losing so much that they're not credible anymore. So Breeze is still credible. Theory gets over. Really, really enjoyed the match presentation. The other matches pulled back on the camera just a little bit. I really feel like Raw and this match in particular, or I should specify Raw's promo segments and interview segments and this match did really, really well to just focus more on the wrestlers are acting to the camera now. And the camera's accentuating that. The wrestlers are working within that. And the other matches tonight didn't really follow through with it, but I feel like they're moving in the right direction in that regard. So I love this. Hallmark of the empty arena era thus far.
Nate, the opener.
I think this might have been my favorite match of the night. I'm a huge fan of Tyler Breeze. I talked about that before on the show. I loved his initial NXT run, especially his match that he had against Jushin Liger. So I am all on board with Tyler Breeze, and I'm definitely on board with Austin Theory. He was somebody new to me once he came into the NXT system. Yeah, I didn't really see anything he didn't evolve. I saw some clips here and there online, but he wasn't really anybody that I knew of other than a name. He has absolutely impressed me over the past handful of months that he's been on TV. This entire match was just, it was done really well for the fact that there was no crowd. I liked the fact that they were both talking. They're both kind of, doing that trash talking, the jawing that you guys are talking about. And both of them are doing it. I mean, even Tyler Breeze, and he did his signature, lying on the corner, in the corner spot, along the top, right on the top ropes. He said, I forget exactly what he said, but I mean, he was trash talking there. So it was kind of a cool little layer to the match because like you guys said, you usually have the roar of the crowd behind them and you don't get to necessarily, you don't hear everything. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you just see the mouths moving and you can't actually hear what's coming out of the mouths, whether or not, they're just soft spoken or the crowd's just that hot. So this is kind of just a cool layer to that match where there's no crowd. It's kind of dead silent in there other than the bumps and the slaps and all that. But then you get just this extra layer, the trash talk, which I really like. And then I also really like the finish to this, even if it was a little silly. Because you kind of do. You get, Austin Theory telling Breeze that, you're washed up. I'm the face. I'm the future of NXT and all that. And then that youthful cockiness bit him in the ass at the end when, he was parading around with the selfie, taking selfies of himself and mocking Tyler Breeze. And then Tyler Breeze takes the opportunity takes the advantage to get the win. And I said it. I think I said it last week. I love it when the karma comes back to bite a baby face. So I was a big fan of the finish as well. And I think this might end up continuing into a feud. I'm totally fine with that. An undercard feud like this. I think it's. Tyler Breeze, he's an NXT favorite. He has been, he was before he left. He has been since he came back. So, he can take, like you just said, Kelly, or Tom, I think it was Tom said it. He can take a series of losses, to pretty much whoever, and he's still going to be credible. He's still going to be a face, and somebody that the crowd gets behind. I guess when there's a crowd again, but the audience gets behind, whether or not he's winning or losing. And I think that, even though Austin Theory lost tonight, he's still fine because of the way that he lost. They can play that into a story next week or in a couple weeks. Whenever they return to this feud, they can kind of just build that into a story. Somehow, he was cocky and he's learned his lesson or something. I don't know. That's probably really bad booking. Don't use that. Use a different idea. Don't use that idea. But I feel like there's an easy way for them to come back to this story with the way that he lost. So I was totally fine with that as well. But I do think this segment was probably my favorite of the night.
It was good, and I think it might have been mine as well. We have an email from our very good friend JB from Detroit. In a recent interview, Edge discussed NXT. His exact quote was, "To me, the guy who is dialed in and completely found what it is that he's supposed to do is Finn Balor. In each of your opinions, what character in NXT do you think is most aware of who they are and what they are supposed to be? Not necessarily the top talent, but the talent that maximizes their ability by getting the most out of the character they are playing. As always, look forward to your thoughts." My easy pick for this right now is Cameron Grimes. He is so fully formed and so perfect in his rattiness. I would have said Velveteen Dream when he was newer. And I still think that he's got a perfect marriage of wrestler to gimmick. But I'm all about the shiny new toy. And that's my boy Cameron Grimes. I really, really think that this is working for him. I also like where we've gone with Priest, and I really, really love what they're doing with Dakota Kai. This was the heel turn I never knew that I needed, and I'm loving every second of it. Now, this could be a very vague question, how you want to take this. You could even take this to mean who's somebody that doesn't have a lot, but they get a lot out of them, like doesn't on the surface have a lot, but gets a lot out of that. That's not how I took it. I'm thinking marriage of wrestler to gimmick, something like Mr. Perfect being the right guy in the right role at the right time. And who else could it have been? Could it have been Terry Taylor, who it almost was? No. It couldn't. It was Kurt Hennig all the way. So, yeah, I say my boy Grimey. Tom?
I figured you would say Grimes, and I thought about making the Dakota Kai pick myself because she's been doing so well right now. And I really like the Priest suggestion because he does stuff that I can't even really put my finger on. It's just certain mannerisms or subtle nuances in the ring that I feel are giving me glimpses into the character that he's playing. And I think Edge's pick is an odd one since Finn wasn't really getting the heel reactions that he was going for. But you know, so be it. Maybe he was defining it a different way. I definitely define my answer to this question as which was harder for me to pick an answer. I feel like it's somebody who recognizes how to accentuate both their strengths and their weaknesses as assets in the character that they play. And a number of weeks ago, I would have easily said Shayna Baszler. She's still technically NXT roster cavorting on Raw, but you know, we all know that she's Raw now. Easily would have been Shayna. Now I'm torn between two names, and it's hard for me to even strip down why. But the names, and I know we're not necessarily thinking top talent, but this is where I ended up anyway. It's Bianca Belair and Tommaso Ciampa. And I just feel like in their own ways, they are both people who just know their characters very, very well, particularly in regards to the strengths, not as much as the weakness side of things, which can be even more impressive when somebody recognizes a weakness and really works it into their act, or at least even something that they can portray as a weakness, even if it's not legitimate to reality. But these two, Tommaso and Bianca, I think they have a good arsenal of strengths each, both just simply physically and athletically and from a character standpoint. And I know I'm speaking very generally, but that's just how it is. They are very good and effective at going out there and getting the reaction that they are going for. Bianca, we've seen her as basically a tweener for so long, and she can turn the crowd on a dime. If she's supposed to get booed, she gets booed, and vice versa. And she can get people really, really into her with her, particularly with her latest run where she's introduced some new catchphrases and really felt like she's found herself even more than she already had, which was already a high bar. And Ciampa the same way. He's one of the best heels and one of the best baby faces that we've seen in the modern era. And the fact that he has reached such great heights with both, I mean, the creative heights that he's reached and the success of crowd reaction that he's attained, is it's a very elite group that he is a part of there.
All right, Nate, who you got?
I guess this is one of the downfalls of going second, because I actually was going to say Bianca Belair and Tommaso Ciampa.
Wow, awesome.
Honest to God, really exactly the same reasons that you said, you know, starting with Belair, you know, I've said this a thousand times. Belair was not somebody I was impressed with when I first saw her, you know, and that was on the Man Classic. She was not really the hair stood out to me. I thought it was kind of stupid and gimmicky at first. I thought there might be some cool things she could do with it, but I wasn't down with it. I really didn't dig it. I've been really impressed with what she's brought to the table, and like you said, how she can just have the crowd eating out of the palm of her hand. Whether she's trying to lean in heel or lean in face, she does a damn good job at getting the crowd to, you know, behind her. In whatever respect she wants them behind her. So I got to give her credit there. And on top of that, I love the work that she did interjecting herself between Charlotte and Rhea. I wasn't quite sure where that was going to go, but, like, you know, bringing back the whole "you don't go here" line and all that, I completely on board with it. I loved it. I've said it, Tommaso Ciampa, Oni Lorcan, one of the best matches I've ever seen live. So in terms of, you know, wrestling and actually in ring performance, you know, Ciampa is, hands down, just a phenomenal, phenomenal talent. But then, you know, a recent example would just be last week. If you guys watched that hour long documentary they did on the Ciampa and Gargano feud, you know, really both Gargano and Ciampa, they played into their characters so well in those interviews. The interviews, if they were scripted, they did not come across scripted. They came across very emotional. It was a blending of kayfabe and real life. And Ciampa, in my opinion, Ciampa especially, did a damn good job, delivering all on that last week. And he has, you know, whether he's been, you know, going leaning face or leaning heel like he was in the original incarnation of the Gargano and Ciampa feud, he's always got a way to connect with the crowd in the way that he's supposed to. Between that, his chops on the mic, and what he brings athletically, I think it's really hard for anybody to top Ciampa in terms of, knowing who they are as a character.
All right, folks, that is our show. Nice to see some new content. Not sure how many more weeks we're going to get of this. We got shelter in place coming. So after quote unquote takeover, not sure what this is going to be, but we're going to get out of here on that note. And I'm going to hang out with my very restless daughter. So I am Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk. Email us pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Call us 515-605-9345 after the show each week. If you want to hobnob with us, Tom?
At Tom Staup on Twitter, plain and simple.
And whoever you are, the other one.
The other guy here, at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. Again, I write the NXT Hits and Message Report. Look for that when it drops later this week.
Last week I called you Tom twice, and I was about to call you Tom again. That's why I had to spit that out and not commit to a name. I don't know if Steve would have come out of me or something.
Better than Corn Pop.
Hey, you said it this week, not me.
Yes,
all right. So we are the usual gang of idiots, and we will see you again soon with Half Takeover next week. Cheers.